Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
I love Free Talk Live.
Thanks.
I'm a podcast listener. I never miss an episode.
Wow.
And if I don't get my Free Talk Live, I tend to do bad things.
Oh, no. And so the episode was late today. So
yes.
What did you do that was bad?
Well, let's just say I have a closet full of corpses right now, okay?
Oh,
I don't know what to do with them, man.
See, you just got to get the damn episode up.
Well, unfortunately, I didn't find out about it until like 4 o'clock this afternoon. So
that doesn't speak highly of Free Talk Live's podcast, AC.
Well, the podcast would have been there, but the AMP version wasn't necessarily – like all the files were up, but I didn't hit the submit button last night. So it you know, some people didn't get it as a result
of that. But like, so if Free Talk Live keeps you from having a pile of bodies and Free Talk Live doesn't get published for whatever reason, just go watch a rerun.
There are a lot of reruns.
That does help sometimes. I will admit that does help sometimes.
Yeah, you know, I apologize for the inconvenience. It's hard to find good help, including myself. Sometimes, you know, I don't finish the process at the end of the night for whatever reason, even though I actually have an alarm set to remind myself to do it. So apparently that failed last night.
An app apparently named Hater matches people based on what they don't like. And according to their website...
Oh, no. All right.
And according to their website, the idea was inspired by a University of Oklahoma study that found that when people share a negative attitude about a third party, it becomes a pretty effective bonding tool.
A bond. Wow. Yeah. The reason we're together is because we share the same hatred. That
it says
I don't know.
I have 17,000 matches.
That I don't know if that's the right basis on which to start a relationship, but who knows? Maybe it's working for people.
Well, I mean, I sought out people who hate the state, and,
yeah,
you know.
And it worked for you.
Yeah.
All right. So have you had an experience with this app?
They had
yet?
Just a checklist thing, and I just marked them all.
I just heard about the story this morning. But apparently the app prompts users to select certain subjects, whether they love them, hate them, like them, or dislike them. And the things are and the subjects are things like a famous person, an activity, or a concept. And after this app was launched in early February, and after a few hundred thousand users, the people who run the app decided to create a map of the United States showing each state what they hated the most. And I gotta say, the map is pretty amusing.
The Chubsters in Montana hate going to the gym.
Okay.
Florida similarly hates workout couples.
Huh.
Yeah.
Those are people who go together to work out?
Yeah.
But are they in a relationship or just like a couple girlfriends going to?
No, that's
no, like actual workout couples. That,
usually
that
with
just
matching
always
outfits.
Struck me as wildly inefficient, but people do that.
Yeah, my wife wanted some personal training, right? So I went with her to do these things. And it's really hard moving that, you know, the weights and all the things. Because there's a huge disparity in sort of what we can move and lift and that sort of thing. So, yeah, that didn't go too well.
But, yeah, it's not a thing that a general heterosexual same-age couple would be able to do together at the same pace. On the same machines. And
I tried to get her
to
go to a jiu-jitsu class with me, too. And she's like, I've spent my whole life trying to protect my neck. There's no way I'm going to go back to this thing over and over again.
They talked about this on the Thursday night edition of the show. So the three of us, we have not yet discussed the main issue at hand in Toronto, which is where a man who decided he was going to take matters into his own hands, as far as park safety is concerned, he built a stairway. That was down the side of a small incline so that people would be safer as they were, you know, apparently some of the neighbors had slipped, maybe fallen down that particular incline, and there were some complaints about it.
And the city said that, hey, it's going to cost us $60,000 to put stairs in here.
That's right.
And he did it for $500.
$550. The man's name is Adi Asti. He's a retired mechanic, so presumably he might know a thing or two about building stairs. He says he built the stairs for a mere $550 after several neighbors tumbled down a muddy slope leading to the park's garden.
If Canada is anything like the States, that might be true, because a stairway is something you build, so then you're responsible for it being in good upkeep and having been built properly and all that good stuff. there are certain exceptions for inherent risks to natural objects.
I see.
So you can't go drown in the lake and sue the city because it's their lake.
Got
because
it.
It's a lake. Lakes have water. Get over it.
Right.
They're not going to make you drown every lake and cut down every tree and flatten all the ground.
I get what you're saying there.
Okay. So if it's kind of a natural incline, that might be enough to get them off. So that could actually be true.
It does seem to be an incline that they mow, but it was probably dug out. That much is true. You could put a sign on it that says, private staircase, use at own
at
risk.
At your own risk.
This is one of the things that I really sort of don't understand is that the problem is that juries will hand out rulings when people are obviously stupid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, privately built staircase, use at own risk.
Right.
And you know somebody's going to hurt themselves on it because somebody can hurt themselves on anything.
Sure.
I was checking out this article a couple of hours ago about a company in River Falls, Wisconsin called Three Square Market. Apparently, they're going to be the first company to provide employees with implantable microchips, and it's going to be used to allow them to buy stuff in the break room, micro market, open doors, log into computers, that kind of thing. And I wanted to know what you guys thought of that, because a lot of people are saying, what if this one day becomes mandatory? It's going to be a crazy surveillance
state. All right, so the microchipping thing, this is old news. I mean, what you're talking about is a recent story, but they're not the first company. I remember years ago, I think it was Alex Jones or, you know, InfoWars, one of his offshoots, was reporting on some club, I think it was in Miami or something, where they were actually allowing their club goers, like their regular VIPs or whoever, to get implemented microchips to give them, you know, access to the club. So this has happened before. I highly doubt this is the first time ever.
Well, this is apparently the first time an employer is going to provide employees with the microchips free of charge.
If the company I was working for announced that they were doing it, even if they announced they were doing it on an optional basis, I'd leave it at right then and there. Like, that's entirely ridiculous. And I know that it's, you know, the argument is going to be contracts, and that's a valid argument, but the state has also kind of granted corporations weird extra powers, and they'll use corporations kind of as testing grounds for things that they know they're not allowed to do.
Now, what was the name of this company again?
Three Square Market.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. So all you have to do is a quick Google search. Just eliminate the most recent dates. So you search between, you know, because this is newer news with this, what you're talking about. It probably came out within the last week or so. If you search Google prior to, you know, last month, then you'll find here's a story from April 3rd of this year. There's a Swedish startup hub Epicenter that is going to be putting microchips in their employees' hands. And, you know, this was just a matter of months ago. These are not new stories.
I'm totally against the microchipping. That's so inhuman. And what about the people when they go on to a different job?
Yeah, that's a good question. How many microchips are they going to get?
Dig it out with a pocket knife.
And also, you're Catherine Albrick, who gives the little health tips throughout the Coast to Coast programs. A week or two ago, she said there was a little Chihuahua dog that developed a tumor at the site of the microchip.
Uh-oh.
And when they took it to the vet, it was cancerous, and they removed it. And luckily, the dog survived the radiation and treatment that they gave it, and it's okay today. So she said, I thoroughly am against, she says, I would not recommend microchipping your pets. Now, that's something to think about.
Yeah, I mean, your body doesn't really react well to putting random things in it. I mean, even putting things that you're supposed to, like blood transfusions and organ transplants, don't always work well, and those are things that we kind of have to do.
Well, obviously, there's going to be risk involved anytime you're modifying your body or your animal's body in some way, but let's be clear. I mean, the pet microchipping has gone on for many years, and probably hundreds of thousands of pets have if not millions of pets have these things in the United States.
Yeah,
and if you find one example of a tumor, that's not exactly conclusive evidence.
Right, but it's a risk without a benefit.
The Associated Press reported on this issue earlier this year. This is the story from April of this year. Again, this recent company, not the first company. The syringe, they write, slides between the thumb and index finger. Then, with a click, the microchip is injected in the employee's hand. So it sounds like it's in that sort of web area between your thumb and index finger.
Yeah, I don't use that for anything
anyway. That's my guess. Another cyborg is created, writes the press. What could pass for a dystopian vision of the workplace is almost routine at the Swedish startup hub Epicenter. The company offers to implant its workers and startup members with microchips the size of a grain of rice or grains of rice that function as...
That's pretty big to like be in your hand. I mean, a grain of rice is pretty big.
The company...
Want to feel my microchip?
It functions to swipe open doors, to operate printers, or buy smoothies with a wave of the hand. Now I'm imagining putting it in something else, Mark, and using that to swipe past the doors.
Well, it's just a lot easier to feel it there if it's in the web of your hand.
Although the chips are biologically safe, the data they generate can show how often employees come to work.
That can't be true, because any procedure you do has risks.
Yep.
And when there is a reason to do a procedure... then absolutely do the procedure, because nothing is risk-free and there's this medical benefit. Okay, fine. Then that's what we're left with. This is not a medical procedure. This is messing with your body for your employer's convenience. Like, no, there is no reason to inject random devices into your body unless they're a pacemaker or something like that.
Patrick opened a door.
That's a reason.
They've been opening doors long before they've had chip implants.
Yeah, but he opened it with his chip.
Only about 150 workers here 2 years later have the chip, so only about 7.5% of the entire workforce has opted into this. Is that higher or lower than you would have guessed? As far as, you know, because everybody on this show is saying, I wouldn't do that. So, you know, 100% of Free Talk Live hosts wouldn't do it. But what would you have guessed, you know, out of 100 people, how many would have opted into this? Would you have guessed as high as 7.5?
I don't know.
I suppose I should have asked you first.
I have not enough information. I would have to know how hard they're pushing it. I would have to know anything about this company. What kind of people are... I mean, I have...
Yeah, I was just asking you for, you know, to take a, you know, shot in the dark as far as what you think its popularity would be. The story.
No, he's not a shot in the dark kind of gal.
That's true. So far, Epicenter's group of cyborgs doesn't seem too concerned. Frederick Kaiser, a 47-year-old chief experience officer at Epicenter, said, quote, "People ask me, are you chipped? I say, yes, why not? And they get all excited about privacy issues and what that means and so forth. And for me, it's just a matter of I like to try new things and just see it as more of an enabler and what that would bring into the future."
I figure those are the kind of folks that'll do it. And one thing from what I'm hearing,
feel like they're on the cutting edge, that
this,
kind of thing?
This Epicenter place is not exactly a business. It is a business, but it's a business hub.
Like an incubator or something like that?
It's sort of like that. So they're not going to be looking at who's using the bathroom. As long as you're paying your rent, what do they care?
Epicenter workers stage monthly events where attendees can receive the implant. That means visits from self-described body hacker Johan Osterlund from Biohack Sweden, who performs the, quote, operation. He injects the implants using pre-loaded syringes into the fleshy area of the hand just next to the thumb. The process lasts a few seconds, and more often than not, there are no screams and barely a drop of blood. A couple that maybe not so bright, and that's kind of, you just were barely telling us that they had a couple of kids together. Is that right?
Right. So then they had one, and the state took it away after some form of, it didn't sound like it was CPS, but one of these affiliated volunteer agencies, it sounded like to me. I'm not 100% clear on that. Took the toddler away because they said because they weren't intellectually capable of raising him. They said there are two specific complaints, and I'm not sure who this was coming from because they couldn't get a statement from CPS, so I don't know if it was coming from the couple, that they weren't teaching him how to wash his hands, and they went to put sunscreen on him, and they only put it on his face and not anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like the way a lot of Americans who are probably still alive are raised. I mean, you know, how many people out there were not taught particularly good hand-washing techniques, and... sunscreen was kind of a new thing when I was a kid. I don't know. I mean, my mom wasn't fastidious about that stuff at all.
Do we know the ages of the parents that are involved in this? Are they in their 30s, 40s, 50s? Just curious.
It's in here. I wanted to say like 38 and 42 or something like that.
So old, you know, old enough to know what sunscreen is, presumably, to know that if you're going to put it one place, you should put it in all exposed places. The question here, I would think, is should people below a certain level of intelligence be allowed to raise children, right?
Yeah, I think that the answer to that these days is theoretically, of course. In reality and practicality, no. No. Because there's always going to be some step that is going to be considered normal that they're going to implement. Do you think that there are people right now in the United States who are doing a bad job of teaching hand washing techniques to their children?
Sure.
And yep, seems likely to me. Whose kids are not having sunscreen applied to them at the right times or something.
Well, to be fair, these people live in Oregon, so I'm not sure how important sunscreen really is there.
You can get a sunburn in other places, you know, non-Florida places.
You can get a sunburn everywhere, but yeah, in Oregon, I don't know.
I kind of am not a big advocate of fighting the state too hard on things that the market would do anyway. It just doesn't seem like a good use of anything to me, really. So,
but how is the market going to accomplish taking kids from people? I mean, if we have a world in which that, you know, the libertarians would like to see, where the non-aggression principle is an honored, important principle, you know, across the board, where people allow others to be free, you know, live their lives how they want, so long as they don't harm anybody else, would the argument be that these parents are harming their kids, and so therefore somebody has the right to come kidnap them? I mean, how would the market handle that?
It wouldn't be a kidnapping in a free society, so they wouldn't be able to have kids for the same reason that I wouldn't be allowed or able in a market to have a Lamborghini. And
but if you can pay for the Lamborghini,
if you can pay for it. So he and his argument is kind of self-contradictory. He's going to the state and saying, "I am unable to perform mundane tasks, therefore I need to be on disability for my mental condition.
Right.
Also, I am capable of raising a human being." Those two things do not go together. Those are mutually exclusive concepts.
So we end the state. And now we have the free market, which, you know, those of us on the show are pretty excited by the idea of ending the state. But there are some tricky issues with that, and this is one of them. I mean, this is definitely, besides who will build the roads, this is probably one of the more legitimate sounding objections is, well, you know, who's going to protect kids from abusive parents or maybe neglectful parents in this case? That's what they were alleging with these two that had their kids taken from them, is that they weren't taking good care of them. They weren't, you know, encouraging them to wash their hands. They were, you know, maybe letting them live in some conditions that would have been less than desirable. Right.
And that's what the state said. The grandfather was saying that they were came close a couple times to squishing the infants and put the baby on the floor with a bottle and just kind of wandered off.
And so
things are a little bit more dangerous.
And so you were saying that you believe there would be ways for the marketplace to put some sort of restrictions in on parents that would have been essentially incentive and economic based?
Well, not even economic. I guess you could look at it that way. So if I go out and buy a Ferrari and am unable to make the payments and pay for whatever ridiculous maintenance Ferraris need, nobody is going to say, "Oh no, we have to go get this woman money so that she can pay for her Ferrari." They're going to say, sell the Ferrari.
Right.
Why that becomes different when it's an infant and not a car. So, like, I'm allowed to go get the most valuable asset possible and
so you're saying the parents should sell their child? I don't know if that'll lead to good things.
Well, first of all, we're kind of doing it now. We just have this weird scenic route around it called adoption, which I think is entirely valid, by the way.
In retrospect, when you get these news stories, like, for instance, the little girl that was taken away from the father because he smoked marijuana and then given to a foster home where they tortured and killed her.
Oh, God.
Well, yeah, like maybe it should have stayed with the dad who smokes pot.
Right.
You know, if the parents, like, what it has to come down to is you basically have to have a life or limb situation going on in order to take a kid, in my opinion. And if
so
a couple of
dum-dums
are out there spitting out kids, not feeding them, letting them run into the street and a whole other bunch of things.
That doesn't. So does life and limb include malnutrition? You know, they're never eating vegetables. Or,
okay, but malnutrition is different than poor diet, Ian, though. Like, we kind of need to make that distinction. Malnutrition is a deficiency in calories. Poor diet is Tampico Punch instead of water and juice.
Yeah.
Those are two different things.
She's right. That's the difficulty, is if there are people right now in the United States that are making poor decisions on health, you know, and things that their kids eat. The good things I can tell you about young people is they're resilient.
A lot of kids aren't sort of planned, and they're going to happen anyway. And then, you know, we get into the question of, well,
and that shouldn't be happening with the state of science that we have, because birth control
unwanted
works.
Kids shouldn't be happening.
Yeah, because birth
control happen all the time.
But and it would be a little bit more deregulated.
You have to take the birth control for it to work, and even if you do take it, it still won't always work.
Yeah, I don't know if I entirely believe that.
You think that all of the failures always have to do with a person's failure?
I think that it's almost always user error. I mean, even the published failure rates are between a half and a tenth of a percent.
Okay. Are we talking about on the pill or what?
On the pill.
Okay.
Well, any hormonal pill, rod, insert.
Okay.
All unplanned children aren't catastrophic. A lot of them are.
No, that's true.
But they're not, you know, so you can have somebody who has a good job or their husband has a good job. They have a house. They're not completely opposed to having a kid, and they did something stupid and they had a kid when they didn't
intend to. A lot of those people
to.
Will say that their kids were the best thing that ever happened to them, even though they didn't intend
to. And so those people are going
to
be fine. But in a free market, because right now it's like, if you decide to just, you know, not be too serious about it, skip some days. I've had women tell me they just skip the whole week.
Hmm.
Okay, you can't do that. I don't like every other medication in the universe, it only works if you
take it.
So,
but what about the situations?
There's not really that much of a threat right now, because right now, if you screw up.
Okay, so the government writes
you a check.
What about the situations where somebody does have a kid, despite all the disincentives, they do have a kid, they're not really able to take care of it, or worse, they're abusive towards it, so you find out about it, there's no CPS at that point to go and kidnap the child. So do you think that there would be in the marketplace a professional group of kidnappers whose job it was to go and take children from people who they believed did not deserve to have those kids,
and then were unwilling to accept payment.
And then fight it in court if those parents were like, whoa, that's kidnapping, we're suing you.
No, because in a free market, either that wouldn't happen often enough for that to be a industry unto itself, or it would, which would mean that the society would be grossly screwed up and wouldn't function properly.
Whenever these lemonade crackdown stories come out, and they do from time to time, this was the first one we'd reported on from the UK, but they happen in the United States in various different places. This is not an uncommon story, sadly. But when, you know, normally when we bring this stuff up, we always ask in the hopes that there's some arch statist out there listening who's willing to actually
be consistent,
take this position of shut these little kids down. We got to put a stop to these unlicensed lemonade stands. Somebody who will actually take that position. Of course, no one ever does, because you would sound like an absolute monster if that's something that you wanted to do. But they found somebody over at the New Statesman. This person is Duncan Hothersall. And Duncan says in the headline here, "You may call me a monster, but I'm glad that little girl's lemonade stall got shut down." Now, this appears to be a serious article.
Yes, it does.
New Statesman, I don't believe is, you know, this isn't The Onion. This isn't a satire newspaper here. "What's wrong," asks Duncan, "with hardworking public servants enforcing perfectly sensible regulations? Who could fail to be moved by the widely shared tears of a 5-year-old whose innocent lemonade stall was brutally shut down by evil bureaucrats? What sort of monster would not have had their heartstrings tugged by the plaintive, "I've done a bad thing," from a girl whose father tells us that she, quote, "just wanted to put a smile on people's faces," unquote. Well, me, actually, writes Duncan Hothersall.
It's a fun guy, this Duncan.
One of the reasons we have stringent controls on who can sell food and drink, especially in unsealed containers, is to try to cut those figures down.
That is one of the reasons that they have that. Another one of the reasons is so that these brave bureaucrats can get paychecks, unionized paychecks, the pensions, and all these other things.
And street stalls in general are regulated because we have a system of taxation, rights, and responsibilities in this country which underpins our functioning society. Regulation is a social and economic good, he says.
Well, I am not entirely in disagreement with him that regulation is not a social good. I think that you can probably do
it. No, he says it is a social good.
Yeah, I'm saying that I'm in disagreement that it is not.
Okay.
So I agree that regulation is a social good, by and large.
Really?
However, yeah, I am, sure. Businesses need somebody standing over and saying, oh, you can't do that. Come on.
Yeah, but there's a difference between the government's regulations and self-imposed certifications and standards.
What regulations do generally is prevent businesses from doing stupid, harmful, irresponsible things.
I don't know if that's true. That's the publicized reason for the regulations. It seems to me that regulations keep people from opening up a business in the first place, from being able to compete and enter the marketplace to offer their service or product at all.
They do lots of that, too.
Yeah, because they're written by a lot of the people who are already in business who want to keep new upstarts and innovators out of the scene.
To be a public good, one must only be good by a small margin. One could be these regulations as they exist, these rules as they exist as regulations, could be better enforced through certification in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. But then they wouldn't be regulations anymore, would they? Don't they pretty much have to be coming down
from
on high?
He said that regulations were a public good. And I said
he
that
said
I
a social and economic good.
Okay. He said that regulations were a social and economic good. And I cannot entirely disagree with his statement. Regulations are a set of rules enforced by the state.
Generally?
A set of rules enforced by a private market licensing agency, certification agency, would in many cases look very, very, very similar to regulations.
Except you would be able to start your own business without having to do that if you wanted to.
And people would be responsible for sort of looking, whatever business they employed, whether it was a restaurant or a, company, a guy digging with a backhoe in their backyard or whatever it was, they'd be able to look for certifications. Some of those certifications would be fraudulent, but some of them are today. That fraudulent aspect would go to arbitration, whatever. But I am in agreement with you that this would be far more efficient. That certification in a private market would be
far
more efficient.
So then you would agree that
would you agree with me that some regulations prevent some malfeasance in the marketplace?
I'm not sure about that.
Okay, well that's because you're an a-hole.
Did you mention that most people want to rent a car? I hear that that's a popular way of being, instead of owning cars, having to maintain the cars and rotating the tires. So do you think that industry is really going to pick up? I mean, there's a demand for that.
You're talking about the Zipcar, I think, is what's one of the brands is, where they're basically cars that are utilized at as many hours of the day as possible. So let's say you take one of these things to work, you park it outside of work, but then you're going to be there for 8 hours. So somebody else is working in the same area. They need to go to the pizza place and pick up some food. So they take the Zipcar down there, and some company, in this case Zipcar, is the one that's maintaining and taking care of the car. I'm not exactly sure how all the ins and outs of that work, but it is something that does seem to exist in larger cities.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.